Today is Wednesday. It's 2 p.m.
Ah, we need Commissioner Udaly.
She was here a second ago.
Okay.
Here she comes.
Very good.
I was first one here, and no That's, one else was I, here, you, so I left.
I have absolutely heard that. I've been told that that was the case. All right. Good afternoon, everybody. This is the Wednesday, August 30th afternoon session of the Portland City Council. Carla, please call the roll.
Saltzman, Udaly.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. Go ahead and call the first item. I'm not going to waste my breath on the rest.
Item 969, accept update on noise control office.
Commissioner Udaly.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Well, I am pleased to have Paul Van Orden present this report on the current state of the noise office. No changes are suggested at this time. As the commissioner and the ONI's new director explore the needs of the city. Our noise office, here's some scintillating facts about our noise office. Not to make fun, I love our noise office. And thank you for wearing a bow tie today, by the way. It's the oldest comprehensive noise office in the United States, and it is our own innovative City of Portland noise office. It celebrated its 40th anniversary in 2016. I'm sorry that I wasn't here to plan that party. As a city, we need to find ways to support our noise office. With a current level of 3.5 FTE, it is one of the only enforcement programs with less staff than at its inception in 1976, when we had a whopping four FTE. And as we all know, noise challenges are only increasing as our city goes. So that's something we'll be looking at. I'm also seeking ways to empower our nationally recognized noise program in its efforts to innovate ways to mediate and address the growing environmental health and livability issues of urban noise pollution. After 18 or more location moves of the staff in the noise office over the last 21 years, we also need to stabilize this program's location and staffing to best serve our community and support their staff, which is another thing that we're working on, the location for the whole Bureau. And I'm going to turn it over to Paul now.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Members of Portland City Council, my name is Paul Van Orden. I've had the honor of being the sworn officer as the city's noise control officer for the last 21 years here in Portland. My presentation today is intended to be an update. We don't have any specific proposals for code changes or additional staff at this time. It is meant to just update council on the state of affairs of the noise office and where we might be headed in the coming years. I want to start off by offering a quick overview, or not necessarily quick, but an overview of a few of the most important focus areas for our small program right now. Today, we use a three-tiered priority approach for our cases. Priority one is obviously the highest priority, and these are cases that impact the largest number of citizens. Priority two are moderate concerns that we may be able to get to or may not be able to get to. And priority three is kind of a holding pattern for cases that have a low enough priority with our staffing levels that they wind up hopefully being addressed in the off season, in the winter, but often wind up in more of a hold pattern. This summer, we have gotten to a point where we are primarily responding to just the priority one. We are responding to just the priority one cases almost exclusively and not getting to many of the priority two cases. Priority one cases are cases that both have a bigger impact on the community, but also have solvability factors that mean we can be more effective with the movement of the case towards resolution. A few examples of priority one cases for our office are noise cases disturbing three or more households, noise disturbances past 10 p.m. and before 7 a.m., construction work specifically after 10 p.m. and before 7 a.m., and mechanical equipment cases that can be easily documented by staff so that we can move forward with resolution. I will talk later about priority two and three cases in my update. This summer, with support from our interim director, Dave Austin, we've explored using informal problem-solving approaches whenever possible to move more cases to resolution when we have the cooperation of the noisemaker and the complainant. In my presentation today, I'm going to highlight a few examples of how that's been helpful to move back towards a process of informal problem resolution and not always moving to formal cases and enforcement types of approaches. On the topic of noise variances, which I'll be talking about today, we process approximately 650 noise variances in the city annually. This is a more than fourfold increase from when I started back in 1996. Variances give us an opportunity to temporarily change code and allow cultural events and construction work to occur in the city. Variances are a unique way for our office to get ahead of noise issues and to work to place limitations on a given project and to require notification to the community. Our rapport with the cultural movers and shakers and the folks in the building trade that are focusing on capital projects and infrastructure improvements are vital to the livability of the city. Variances, according to our first noise control officer, Dr. Paul Herman, are a vital way to educate noisemakers about ways they can be respectful to our community. And they also help to keep more cases from turning into complex, often, enforcement cases. I want to just mention that under the past leadership of Commissioner Fritz's office, we've been focusing on taking basic noise permits off the plate and moving, basic noise permits in parks off the plate and moving those to assistance with the Parks Bureau. And so that's helping to take a body of work off the plate of the noise office. And we have gone through this first year of that process. It's working very well. I would expect that moving into future years that we'll see more cooperation with the Parks Bureau and economies of scale for Parks Bureau, since they're already working on parks, to have the noise office potentially less involved, which frees us up to work on other cases. So that's been a great partnership with Parks. We're still working through some of the fiscal mechanisms of how they collect the money, and right now they're moving it to the noise office. That could potentially change down the road, but it's been a great success in the last year.
Hey, Paul, just for my own understanding, is that for concerts and such? Is that what that's focused on?
Yes, it's primarily smaller events so that a non-technical expert in parks can easily facilitate that approach. So it's for small events that probably the noise office can't really get out to them. So it's putting some of the weight and onus on park staff to deal with them already. And so it's really just smaller events that occur in parks, not the bigger events that would still come to the noise office.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. And then I want to mention, after our move from the Bureau of Development Services a few years ago and to our new location in Oney, we've been able to place a new focus on issuing citations to move towards quicker resolution with our cases. And I had a recent opportunity to have a check-in with the Bureau of Development Services, and they are starting to move forward with more citation work, especially with the short-term rental situation, and discovered that there are several opportunities for us to further improve our citation process as we become more stabilized in our current location here at Oney. So that's a notable benefit, because the citations, as we've been more proactive in issuing citations, have really moved cases to resolution a lot quicker. One major concern that I do have as the noise control officer is exploring ways to increase our number of field contacts. In recent years, we've moved from a past practice of having multiple field inspectors when we were at BDS to just one primary field person, which is our noise inspector. During this time period, we have actually decreased our number of visits into the field. The noise in the city is clearly not getting any quieter. I believe this is going to be one of our more important factors to address as we move forward with our new director at Oney. We'll need to explore cooperation with a long list of partners, and especially with our colleagues in the Portland Police Bureau on these cases. This year started off with 3.5 staff members in our office divided in two locations. We were actually having two of our staff, our administrative staff, were operating out of City Hall, and myself and our noise inspector were out at 4747 East Burnside. And the summer fortunately turned into a stabilizing opportunity for our noise team as the interim director, Dave Austin, moved the four of us back together in City Hall. Stability, as I've mentioned, will be an important factor to maximize our efficiencies in the noise office. In the last 21 years, as Commissioner Udaly mentioned, the physical location of our office has moved more than 18 times. So combined with a fairly frequent change in our staffing, as we either have gone up and down in staffing numbers or we've actually had the physical person take a different job, and so we've changed the person who is doing the job, we have definitely lost some ability to be as effective as we could for the city of Portland. So we're hoping that we can stabilize those challenges.
Paul, when you mentioned that you used to have two people at 47th and East Burnside, it occurs to me that the parking is a little easier there, and you're also out in the field. So thank you very much. So in terms of getting to priority sites, whereas if you're all four of you are downtown, then you've got the challenges of parking and congestion. You know, in a perfect world, how do you balance that?
You know, the interesting thing is there are some benefits, because at one point we actually did have, there was a short period of time where the inspector was the only one out at the location at 4747 East Burnside. There are some benefits to it because that position could potentially hit more things to the east side.
Right.
That would become beneficial, having a person out there, if we had multiple field staff. The biggest challenge is our communication as a team together has increased our effectiveness so much that having a person out remote is not necessarily effective. If we had more inspectors, it would be wonderful, like we experimented years ago with Commissioner Leonard, having multiple locations with staff. And we actually had somebody out at the Kenton Firehouse for a little while helping us with noise out of that location. So that could be beneficial, but with just one person, it turns out to be more effective having us downtown.
Thank you.
We'll be looking forward to opportunities to stabilize noise control and make adjustments with our staffing to better adapt to a rapidly growing city. I want to offer a couple of quick notes on the background for the noise office. The commissioner has touched on many of these. In the summer of 1976, Portland established the first comprehensive urban noise office. Dr. Paul Herman was our first noise control officer. And interestingly enough, I've mentioned this before at council, our code was written over several years with funding from the United States Department of Housing and Urban Development, as well as the Environmental Protection Agency. So we have a long history of doing good work in the country and trying to innovate in the work that we do. We also have a very unique situation, which the council is fairly well versed in, which is we have a city noise review board, which, to the best of my knowledge, is the only city in the country that actually has a board of citizens primarily. In this case, we have five individuals. Three are citizens. One is a construction industry representative, and one is from the acoustical industry, that represent our needs on higher level permits that impact the community, and then also focus on code change recommendations to council, much like the Planning Commission would. We chatted a little bit in several different ways about the staffing. So currently we have 3.5 FTE to serve the community. The noise control officer position I'm in is a sworn officer position with all the duties and authorities of a police officer, with the focus being on the enforcement of Title 18. We have been fortunate that we've been doing this so long that we are recognized as national experts in acoustics and noise and are regularly approached by other cities for advice on how we do our work. The administrative side of our office is covered by two folks. One person is 0.5 FTE. Their other 0.5 is focused on the liquor needs for ONI. And that position is an assistant program specialist. Our assistant program specialist focuses primarily on the noise review board needs of the program, construction noise variances, and analyzing data and helping me with the data side of the equation. Our OSS2 is primarily focused on the intake of complaints through the different methodologies that we take complaints in, electronically, via our hotline, via agency references, and then also focuses on the intake of our noise permits aside from construction permits and noise review board permits. He also helps to sign out noise meters, so we have a program we've done for at least 20 years, if not more than that, where we sign out basic noise meters to the public so they can actually screen their own community issues and get a sense of, is it in violation? Do I want to move a case forward? Do I want to just talk informally with our neighbor? And so we had slowed down a little bit with that for a while, and we're back to signing out noise meters through our office. And then finally, we have our noise inspector, and that person's obvious primary focus is our field work out in the field, except for the more technical cases, which I would cover. And in the summer, we try each summer to take some of the workload off the field inspector, and we try and have the noise control officer position cover things closer to the core of the city and have the noise inspector focus on the things outside the core of the city. That person is also in many meetings with stakeholders to try and resolve complaints and sits in on a number of different meetings with the city, with our city partners, such as with our liquor licensing process. So we've chatted about three primary components of the noise office, so just to go back through them real quick, we have the variances, which are a primary component for the noise office, we have the complaint response, and we have the city's noise review board. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about all of those. So as a general overview of noise variances in the city, we have our minor permits, which I started to mention, which are block parties, weddings, small grand openings for businesses, community events, and those are usually things that have 100, 150 people and generally don't have a very big impact on the community. And so those events occur both in parks and outside parks. The concept I was mentioning earlier, the minor permits that occur in parks are the ones that we see a potential for moving those more to the Parks Bureau's control and oversight. The high-impact community cultural and entertainment events are events that we would expect at least 250 people to attend and that would raise the decibel level in the community by 15 decibels or more. And so from a layperson's perspective, anytime you increase the decibel level by 10 decibels or more, you're doubling the experience of the sound. So you would expect that these are events that would at least have a big enough impact on the community that they are clearly noticed by the community and have an impact that we need to put more time into reviewing their event, the duration, the location, how they're set up. And the next classification is construction. Historically, that's represented about 10 to 12% of our work. Interestingly, I'm going to point out a few of the notable changes recently with the construction boom. The variances over the last several years have been, as I mentioned earlier, about 650 variances. So you can see a quick breakdown in 14-15 and 15-16 demonstrate that the bigger classification of our permits are those minor events. There have been times in the discussions at the city that we've said, does it make sense to still do minor permits? And interestingly, the benefit, as I've mentioned earlier, to addressing issues at the front end, meeting with applicants, winds up being paramount to resolving community concerns before we even have to move to a noise case. So,
Paul, what's an example of a minor noise variance in the film and TV area?
So interestingly, most filming operations, if not all of them, we wind up classifying as a minor permit and not a major permit. We have been very accommodating of the film industry because of the positive fiscal impact that it has on the community. So almost any filming operation you see, they'll come in for several locations that they're filming and they'll pull a permit, and they often don't know their next locations. So they'll quite often in a season of filming in Portland come back several times to our office and pull a basic noise permit. Interestingly, the film industry is so well-versed in community notification and working with the community because if they create challenges, they're not going to have an easy time coming back to a neighborhood, that for our purposes, the filming operations fall into that classification currently.
But is the noise we're talking about here the cameras and the generators, or is it because they want to run a hot rod car down the street, or because they're filming a rally or something?
So almost all of the filming operations we deal with, the primary source are generators for the filming operation. And they usually spec out hospital-grade generators, so we call them whisper-quiet generators. We tend not to get complaints on the generators. We try to look at the main things that we've historically seen to cause problems in the neighborhood, gunfights, so if they're going to have a gun sequence, things that are notably louder. But normally the issue of the filming operations are not usually a giant impact on the neighborhood. The one issue that we have challenges with is trying to work with the film industry to make sure they're leaving or arriving in a neighborhood at a reasonable time, because as they pack out 2 or 3, 5, 10 big trucks, that can be a big enough source in the neighborhood that we try to make sure they wait until the next morning and don't just stop at 1 in the morning and pull away and have a big impact.
Thank you.
So on the noise variance side, not a giant change. We have seen an increase over time, and the biggest one that I wanted to just point out is on the construction side of the equation. In the last 2 years, we saw a little bit of an uptick in 15-16, but then in 16-17, we took a notable uptick, and noise variances in the construction category went from about the 10 to 12% range all the way up to 29%. So we really are, as we see some of the pressures on the appeals to noise variances and just driving around town, all the construction, we can see that very clearly in the body of work that we're doing in the noise office. So it definitely is a notable uptick. I would say from my experience with the construction industry over the last 20 years in Portland, I would think this would carry through 18, and then we'd see it stabilize a bit in 19. The biggest question will be how much, and it's kind of hard to predict where that's going to go in 19. Complaint response, obviously that's the primary factor everyone thinks of the noise office. They don't really realize how much focus winds up being placed in the variance side of the equation. And the complaint response is what you would expect from a normal city complaint-driven process. We have concerns conveyed from multiple methodologies. We have calls to our hotline, calls to the hotline that are answered live. We have online intake via what we call our TrackIt system, which is pretty antiquated and has some notable challenges, but still is a good source of online intake. And then we have just normal emails that come into our office. And then finally, we have agency referrals from all different agencies in the city moving cases to the noise office when they aren't under their purview. So we mentioned earlier that our response is broken into three different categories. We discussed the primary category that we try to place our focus on with our staffing. The other two categories, priority two cases, are cases like construction on a Sunday or construction up to 10 p.m. and not after 10 p.m. when it's waking up neighbors. So we still try to address those, but it's not as high a priority as cases where they're waking someone up. Complaints regarding industrial and commercial operations that are not mechanical equipment. So we get a lot of really unique delivery cases that are difficult to resolve because there's not a stationary piece of equipment. And so those would fall into a priority two because of the time that it would take to resolve those. Cases that would normally be a priority three, but citizens have taken time to document those with what we call a citizen complaint log, which is a legal affidavit of statements of facts. Those would move up to a priority two when the community is doing community policing and helping to get us information so we can move their case forward. Leaf blowers that are operated outside the legal hours in the code, we would try to address as a priority two case, meaning someone's operating it in the middle of the night and waking neighbors up in a zone of the city when they're not supposed to. And finally, band rehearsal cases with regular documented times. So we have a lot of band and stereo cases in our complaint body of work, and cases where we actually have an ability to potentially go out in the middle of the night or go out at 9, 10 o'clock at night and measure them because someone's documented it are a priority too for our office. And finally, just as a reference for the priority three cases that we deal with in the office, these are intermittent noises Some of these are intermittent noises that have no pattern or regularity, so there's no doubt that they impact the community in a negative fashion, but actually being able to move forward with enforcement is a challenge. Residential stereo cases where the cases are being called in before 10 p.m. Most of those tend to happen between 5 o'clock and 10 at night, so very difficult with our staffing situation to get out and catch them when they're happening. And the Portland Police Bureau has historically placed a focus on noise cases only after 10 p.m., so they kind of fall into a area that's nebulous in terms of getting a response from the city at this time. Leaf blowers operated during the legal hours. So if someone is unhappy that someone's leaf blowing, but it's the legal hours of the city, we're going to place a low focus on that because our first focus is to get people out of the mode of waking the community up at night. Street musicians, we used to be very responsive to street musicians, but with one noise inspector and myself as the noise control officer, it's pretty hard to get out and be effective on street musicians. Apartment-to-apartment noise, legally, when the sound does not carry over one property line to another, it's outside of our purview. So we would not reply to apartment-to-apartment noise. That would primarily be the police bureau. The same situation happens with condo-to-condo noise, where if it's on the same lot line, the way the noise code is written, it's written to address sound emanating from one property and being measured or impacting a neighboring property. So those issues fall into that priority three classification. And finally, the more interesting one is...
Can I ask you a question? And you may not know the answer. And as police commissioner, I certainly know who to call to get the answer. But if it's a unit-to-unit noise complaint, is that a domestic disturbance? Where does that fall on the spectrum of potential crimes?
You know, interestingly, it's such a wide range of things that... A lot of times, literally, an officer could address it as just disturbing the peace. They can address the issue as they could actually, under the police bureau's codes, they could write it as a noise citation for a noise disturbance. So there are some ways that it can be addressed, but it can be very messy. So historically, in my 20 years as the city's noise officer, it's usually fallen off the radar if it's before 10 p.m.
Okay.
And finally, the issue of automotive-related noises has become a very... messy one for us to be effective on because the Department of Environmental Quality and the DMV no longer test mufflers at their air emissions stations. So the way the noise code is written, a police officer or the noise control officer can write tickets against somebody who has, let's say, no muffler, or they have a Harley where they put a straight pipe on it. And then what we would do is write a ticket, and they'd have to go to the DEQ DMV to be tested, and somebody would actually test them in an appropriate testing facility, and if they're in compliance, then they can actually get the ticket. Because let's say they change the muffler, they could actually get the ticket revoked or pulled back. And if they're still in violation, then the ticket would stick and they'd have to pay the ticket. So the challenge was several years ago, the DEQ and DMV defunded that effort. And so we're in a nebulous point right now where I would imagine the Noise Review Board would look to ask council for some changes to the code to have a different way to address the situation. But right now, whether it's motor vehicles with excessive stereos, we're really not in a very good position to be effective on those issues. So as the city grows, I would definitely anticipate that we'll see those issues grow. So we do have a need for the Noise Review Board to come back to council with some ways to potentially address that and see if those are amenable to council. So a review of the noise complaints in 2006 and 2007, you'll notice that we had, and in most years, we have a very large number of complaints that are within the classification of residential music stereo and band. So interestingly, those are what you would imagine with a citizen blasting their stereo at their neighbors, a citizen who has a band rehearsing in the house. And these cases are fascinating because the greater majority of them, when we send a letter out, we actually can resolve them. So historically, it's been 80% or greater. At one point, it was almost 90%. Just educating somebody with a warning letter solved the problem. We're getting to a point now, though, that they are one of the harder cases to solve because it is very intermittent. Someone's teenager comes home at a time when mom and dad aren't home. They blast the stereo, mom and dad pull in the driveway and they turn it down. not enough time for an officer to get out there.
Ah, the memories, Paul, yeah. The memories.
So those have always been one of our larger numbers of cases in the noise office percentage-wise, and so that hasn't changed historically. Residential mechanical equipment has stayed about the same level at about 15%. Construction has generally remained the same. We've seen a bit of an uptick on the when you look at the percentages of total cases. Interestingly, by having folks pull noise variances, I would argue that we haven't seen a proportional increase in construction cases for the number of or the percentage of noise variances that we're processing. And I think part of that is that we're dealing with a lot of construction cases at the front end. These construction cases you see are actually primarily represented by residential single family and two family type construction. A lot of the cases are small mom and pop operations that push the envelope until we cite them. So with all these giant projects we have happening in town, they tend to actually have somebody who's in charge that we can respond to. When we go out to a construction site, there are four or five different subcontractors just within a week that it's a little bit harder to get resolution. The industrial commercial cases, a bit of a shift there of recent downward. And motor vehicles a bit messy because although we try to track them a bit, we really don't have an effective way, as I mentioned, to solve those cases. And the other cases are things like doggy daycare and similar operations. So one of the things you'll note is back in 2006, 2007, we had approximately three inspectors. It depends on how you counted them because we had other folks helping us at BDS who weren't specifically just noise inspectors. With just a single inspector, you'll see that our numbers have gone down. I would not argue that the cases in the city have gone down. It's more so a factor of the things that we can address with just one person wind up being smaller, and it would be hard-pressed to say if there isn't potentially a factor where folks may be getting frustrated that with our staffing levels, we can't respond as quickly as they would like. So we may be seeing potentially, kind of hard to analyze, we may be seeing less folks calling as they hit a little bit of a roadblock.
Paul, could you give us some sense, the day of an inspector, do you have to go out on site for each of these complaints? Do you take them over the phone? What's a usual, typical day?
So historically, for an inspector to do the job, it's about 50-50. 50% of the time is in the field. 50% of the time is the paperwork, getting things organized so you can look things up on our track system, find out the zoning history, see if code compliance has a case. And so sometimes it's front-loaded that you're doing that work in the beginning of the day, depending on which types of cases you're chasing. Sometimes it's back-loaded and you do it at the end of the day. So, for instance, if you were an inspector chasing construction, you would likely try to hit those in the morning because they try to get finished around 3 o'clock, and you'll more than likely find folks working on the site when you go by to chat with. So you'd go out, you'd try and hit as many locations as you can. We rely very heavily these days on citizen logs because you can imagine that one inspector can only hit so many locations effectively. And so the inspector may hit a handful of locations. We are definitely seeing less inspections now, and I think a part of it, from my experience, is we're having some major transportation challenges. I used to be able to hit probably 8 locations in a day. I don't think I can do that very effectively anymore. Usually your dialogue with the construction site is going to be fairly quick, maybe 20 minutes. The minute you get into something like a residential situation where there's a motion attached to the issue, it's a much longer dialogue. Neighbor-to-neighbor issues are more difficult than construction because there's often a neighbor feud going on, and so you're stepping into a social work-like situation. And so one of the issues we are going to have to figure out how to address is how to get out to more cases because it is a primary tool for solving our noise cases, whether that's through innovative community policing with some of our partners in the police bureau or different ways to address the situation in the noise office. It definitely is one of our most important modes is the inspections.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm not sure if I answered your question.
You did. That was helpful. I appreciate it.
So the interesting element of our construction cases is the fact that I mentioned earlier we are trying to move towards a approach of more informal process solving. And so I'm going to just show two quick slides. This is a location called Amalgamated Sugar. It is up off North Lombard, primarily in terms of this photo is taken from Lombard. The formal address is off Columbia at 2600 Northeast Columbia. The informal problem-solving cases have become a bit more of a regular affair for us. And this is one I'm going to mention, and the second one I'm going to mention is this side of the stadium, Fred Meyer's. It's a loading noise and neighboring apartments concerned. You can see the loading docks, and then off in the distance, if you see the apartment complex kind of in the center of the slide, just past the residential, it looks like a kind of a single-family duplex type of building next door to that. So the informal problem-solving cases, with the case you saw with Amalgamated Sugar, it was a pretty fascinating case because our office started getting a series of complaints from all over the Northeast Portland area from about a 10 to 15 block range, and no one could tell us what the noise was exactly. They just said they had this sound that was metallic, that was banging. Everyone had their own way to describe it. There was some commonality to the description that made us think everyone was talking about the same issue, but at first no one knew exactly what the source was. So we tried to coordinate with the complainants and tried to coordinate with where they were map-wise to triangulate where the source was. And interestingly enough, from an informal problem-solving perspective, what wound up being most effective was when we chatted with complainants, we encouraged them to get the word out to their neighbors either through the neighborhood system or in my role as the chair of the Northeast Coalition of Neighbors, we tried to see if we can get the word out through partners in the neighborhood. And what wound up happening was neighbors used the Nextdoor app, and they actually said, hey, if you're hearing this, call the noise office, let them know what you're hearing. And we wound up being able to triangulate it. But what happened concurrently as we were triangulating it is Amalgamated Sugar helped us by, because we called every single source that was on Lombard in this vicinity and said, are you doing something unusual? What's happening? We're getting complaints. The folks from Amalgamated Sugar jumped on Nextdoor and they said, hey, we're reading your description. We think this is us. And so what was great is it wasn't a formal case. We couldn't even send a warning letter because we didn't know where the address was. And what wound up happening was through some cooperative measures, we learned that the primary source when our noise inspector and I visited the site was a transportation challenge where they could no longer get the rail cars that they needed to move the sugar. The rail cars would carry about three times the volume that they could put in a single truck. And so they were having trucks arrive at the site, offloading their sugar material into the trucks to transport to their locations. And what wound up happening is they had historically used rail cars that would go onto a shaker device, and it would shake the rail car to have the sugar keep falling into the vessel. And what they had to do with the trucking operation is they had to physically come out with a mallet and slam on the tankers. And so what was hilarious was once the manager realized how big of an impact they were having on the community, they stopped doing that operation at night. He jumped all over it. He went to the corporate office and started working as hard as he could to see if they couldn't get back to the rail cars. So they were trying to move their operations back to rail cars. But it was a great example of not opening a formal case, working with the community, fairly time effective. It wasn't very time consumptive for us to do it this way, and it really worked to solve the problem. So that was a great example. Then the secondary element was...
Paul, I would like to know where I can lodge a complaint about them taking down the historic white satin sign, because that was one of my favorite visions, the trains, the tower, the white satin sign. So
you know,
sad.
I can see it now that you mention it, but I forgot that thing
Amalgamated was Sugar just doesn't roll off the tongue like white satin. You can pass that along.
When I chat with them, I'll let them know. The other case that I mentioned was Fred Meyer Stadium location. We had quite a few challenges with them as they were building out their remodel to the facility, so there were a lot of community tensions because the construction had definitely pushed the envelope. I don't recall how many citations we issued, but we definitely had to cite Fred Meyer's a few times for that particular project. So moving forwards with the newly renovated facility, there were tensions in the community. And in this particular case, because they reoriented some of their operations, there was more loading activity pushed right up against the residential element of the community. And we started getting complaints primarily from one household, but a few other neighbors had also been vocal. And we were able to, through your office, through the commissioner's office, have Fred Myers come in, have the neighbor come in, and agree to talk through the issue and come up with an approach where the neighbor has now been calling Fred Myers directly and saying, hey, somebody, you know, the driver for the produce truck labeled such and such is idling too long, is impacting the neighborhood. And through an informal process, we haven't opened a case, we haven't written a good neighbor agreement, things have been working very well. I think Fred Myers doesn't want us to move to enforcement because they know, fortunately, with the enforcement tools in place, that we can move to enforcement. And the neighbors also realize from our dialogue with them that with one noise inspector, it'll be far more effective if you can come to a cooperative agreement rather than the city having to go down an enforcement road. So I primarily mentioned these two approaches because we may, as we reexamine where the noise office is headed for the next 20 years, find that our cultural approach as Portlanders is more amenable to an informal process while not letting go of our ability to take formal cases forward. The other element that I just wanted to mention is, let me switch over. Oh, I just wanted to mention briefly that with the informal problem-solving approach, or an approach that doesn't require the noise office to resolve cases, we have been very effective when we have violators work with the police bureau and have a report written by the police bureau. And if they forward us a citation, we'll actually write the ticket right through the noise office. So we take that body of work off the police bureau's needs and issue citations. And we have very few of those challenged. So when we write a ticket based on a police report, it means that it doesn't have to go to the DA's office. The DA's office tends to put noise cases so low that we wind up losing those cases, in my experience. We have the code hearings process that we can have the appeals flow through, and we tend to win those cases. So from an informal problem solving or programmatic improvement perspective, that has been most beneficial, and I'm hopeful as we shift and make changes to the police bureau that we can continue to improve our approach in that particular way. And so what I wanted to kind of close things out with is just a picture for council on where we're headed in the coming year or so. And so the city's noise review board, as one of their action items, has been working to address this increase that we're seeing in nighttime construction. To have a, it's been very informal right now, but trying to have a somewhat regular meeting with the construction industry to begin to address nighttime construction noise. So what we're just starting to get our handle on is, where is the city headed with the densification of the city, with our limited ability to block roads, that we're in a position where we're likely going to have to require more work to occur at night in the city. And so having this construction work group through the Noise Review Board will enable us to be able to educate the public on where we're headed and to work with our partners so we can set realistic expectations for what they can and can't do at night. So that's one of the projects that's started off slowly in the last 6 to 9 months, and I would expect when we get into the winter, we'll be back and focused on that issue. The Noise Review Board, this is an important one, I think, for council. We'll be moving forward with addressing the idea that appeals to the Noise Review Board's decisions, I'm sorry, not the Noise Review Board's decisions, the Noise Control Officer's decisions would be appealable to the Code Hearings Office instead of to City Council.
Hear, hear.
Yes, and for all, and I have just a note that that would be for all non-Noise Review Board related variances. The Noise Review Board related variances are big operations, and they probably make sense for the public to have an opportunity to talk to council, but I can't remember the last time one of those came to council. So I don't know that that's going to add a body of work if we were to do things that way. It tends to be the smaller projects that are getting appealed. We will be revisiting the direction that council has given the noise office on nighttime garbage truck noise. As you may recall in some of my presentations on our appeals to construction work and our discussions around pile driving noise, the city's noise review board took a hiatus from their work plan to address garbage truck noise and focused on pile driving. And so I would expect that we will see the board returning to a focus on nighttime garbage collection and bringing a report back to council on the state of affairs for garbage collection in the city at night.
Paul, just a pet peeve of mine is, it, since I now live in Goose Hollow, it's not just the nighttime garbage truck noise. It's also the way some of these very large rigs navigate very small roadways. And I think this is one where it would behoove us to do a kind of coordinated look with PBOT and with ONI, because I think there's both a noise issue and there's a public safety issue.
Okay.
And what I've observed, I'm not trying to blow the whistle on anybody, is that people are very flexible about the rules of the road when they're collecting garbage. And my pet peeve is on very narrow roads where garbage trucks come downhill and just alternate on either side of the road to pick up the trash, which, of course, is fine, except it's completely illegal and you're blocking, you're going against the traffic. I understand from a workflow point of view why you might want to do that, but it's creating a public safety concern, pedestrian hazards, car hazards, as well as a noise issue.
Okay. Copy. We'll make sure that we're coordinating with PBOT on that, chatting with them.
Yeah.
The next item I just wanted to mention, I think most of the members of council have heard some of the perspectives of the Noise Review Board and staff that the Pearl District is in a unique situation where it's zoned EX. The challenge with that for the noise code is EX is considered an industrial classification, so it allows the highest decibel level. So I would expect that the Noise Review Board would be back to looking to address a methodology for recognizing the Pearl District as a mixed-use zone and not as an industrial zone for the purposes of permitted decibel levels. That may get addressed in the Central City Plan, but I'm not aware if there's a specific approach for that currently. So that is just something else to be aware of, because I think as we have questions raised by our community members in the Pearl District, that is something that will probably be of interest to them. And then finally, the Noise Review Board and noise staff do still plan to move, once we're out of the busy summer season, to moving forwards the Noise Review Board's suggestions on pile driving and changes to the pile driving regulations for the city.
Mary is very happy to hear that. Very good. Excellent. Does that complete your report,
yes,
Paul?
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you. It was a thorough report. Excellent. Is there public testimony on this item?
Yes, we have 7 people signed up.
All right. Let's see. How are we doing time-wise?
We're going to lose a quorum later, Mayor.
Yeah. So could people try and get their testimony within 2 minutes, please? I'll be a little flexible on that. When you have 30 seconds left, you'll see the yellow light go off. When your time is up, it turns red. Please state your name for the record. If you're a lobbyist, we need to know that under council rules. If you're here representing an organization, we'd like to hear that too. Everybody knows, please do not interrupt other people's testimony. If you do so, you'll be asked to leave. If you're asked to leave and you don't, you're subject to arrest to trespass. We don't want that to happen, so everybody just hear people out respectfully. Who's first?
The first 3 are Frank Harris, Noah Kleinman, and Jim Krebs.
Fantastic. Come on up. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having us. Mr. Mayor, council people, my name is Frank Harris. I'm the Vice President of Construction for Hoyt Street Properties in the Pearl District. And thank you for having us here today and talking about this very worthwhile topic. I'll limit my conversation to pile driving because that's what we have recent experience of in the Pearl with Hoyt Street. And I want to thank the city and Paul Van Orden and his staff's efforts in their excellent work working with us and our contractors to mitigate issues as they come up regarding noise on our projects. I think they're doing a great job, and I want to thank the Noise Committee Task Force for all the good work they're doing as well. I want to state that you know, we realize we live in a community now that this is the 16th building Hoyt Street has built in the community in the Pearl District, and we're highly involved in that community, and we want to be good neighbors and good facilitators of that community. We have evidenced that by some of our efforts to mitigate some of the noise that we've created with our recent construction of Block 20, the Vista condominium project. And that included sound blankets for the school that's nearby, and also sound attenuation on the actual pile driving mechanism itself. And Paul can attest to some of the results that we received, improved results in lessened noise, lessening of noise that we received through those efforts. So I just wanted to voice our opinion and our thanks for having a good staff that can deal with these issues in a responsible manner.
Much appreciated. Thank you, sir. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor and commissioners. I'm Noah Kleiman. I'm a nonprofit leader here in Portland, but I'm testifying today as a citizen who likes the way Portland sounds. I've been in Portland since 2002, and in that time developed a certain taste for the noise level that we enjoy here, and I didn't realize that was what was happening until I visited another city and stayed there after kind of a long time of just sort of hunkering down here in Portland. I remember the first time I visited D.C., recognizing that there was something very different about the feel of that city beyond just that it was a different city, in that I saw businesses that had speakers on, you know, at restaurants with speakers on the front of their business that were blasting the episodes of The Simpsons at the street trying to get you to come in. That at night the noise level from garbage trucks and from emergency vehicles using sirens right next to where there's like a hotel, which is built for sleeping, surprised me. And I learned from the noise office that Portland's noise office is fairly progressive and has a public health mission. And I learned that because during the period of time when we had multiple noise investigators, that the noise office was able to do outreach that was about public health, about safe listening. And so I just like to call attention to that as we grow. I would like to see us having that kind of public health coverage that we've enjoyed continuing.
Very good. And that reminds me of a brief but funny story. I was in another city. I won't mention the name because I don't like to badmouth other people's jurisdictions. But I was sitting at a lovely outdoor cafe enjoying my pizza. Next door was a karaoke bar. Oh, and they were doing the same thing. They had a video and sound outside from a karaoke bar. And it was so awful. It was driving all the customers at the pizza place away. I thought, man, this is the basis for a real fight between these two business owners and operators. So thank you for sharing.
Speak for yourself, Mayor.
Very good.
Fantastic.
You have
to
a
me.
Voice. I don't.
He'll do it
good
his
afternoon.
Way. Good afternoon. My name is Jim Krebs. I'm with a company called SigiCom Incorporated. We're located in Fort Collins, Colorado. And I was invited by Paul to come in and speak with you today because he wanted me to share some information about what it is we do and how it might be able to facilitate him and his office do their work. We are in the business of providing instrumentation to do remote, unattended construction site monitoring for noise, dust, vibration, a variety of parameters, and I just wanted to share some information about what sort of capabilities that represents in the event that could be helpful, again, to his office. I understand that the City of Portland is already engaged in some noise monitoring at the PIR, the International Raceway, where they're monitoring for noise, so you're already doing some of that now. I brought a small PowerPoint, but I'm going to skip through that quite quickly. In urban environments, we're seeing increasing construction activity involved with renovation, new projects that are next to existing structures. So it's having impact not only on those buildings, but the population at large. And as Paul mentioned, a lot of that work is being moved to nighttime efforts, which can mitigate traffic congestions, things like that, but at night it has more of an impact on the population, so is more of a concern. So the technology exists to monitor remotely and without any involvement by personnel, automatically monitor noise levels, record the data, and send messages. If you set a threshold level and it exceeds that threshold level, it can automatically send text messages or emails to any number of people that are stakeholders to the project, whether it be people in his office, members of the community, council members, you know, whomever. You can set up the projects to communicate however makes the most sense.
Sir, we each of us have bureaus where actually this technology would be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And you said you had a PowerPoint. So could I ask you if you wouldn't mind forwarding your PowerPoint to the clerk's office so that she can distribute it afterwards?
Okay. All right. And I want to emphasize the fact that this is automatic monitoring. It really involves limited expense of labor to the project. And
is this what your company does? They make this product?
We make the product. Okay, we are not good. Consulting engineers. We don't do the monitoring ourselves. We simply provide the instrumentation. But given the personnel that's in Paul's office, the expertise is there.
Got it.
To administer this themselves quite easily. And, again, without increasing FTEs accordingly. So several goals. You can document the noise levels continuously and record the violations of those noise limits. You can make that information available to the public. You can invite them into projects so they can actually look at the data and maintain your community involvement. The information is recorded, so you have actual documentation, which could be particularly helpful in litigation scenarios where everything is documented and you have exact noise levels, which could be quite helpful. I mentioned about the messaging, and the system can automatically send messages when you have a violation. It's easy enough to use that you don't necessarily need to employ a professional engineer to administer the system. And quite simply, it's also very effective that if you publicize the fact that you're doing this monitoring for construction projects to the public, it has a tendency to reduce significantly the number of nuisance calls and complaints that you actually get because they're aware that you're proactively working on their behalf to minimize and mitigate that noise pollution. So while we commonly will work with consulting engineering firms, it's not necessary with a system like ours to employ them separately as part of the construction project. Again, the people in your noise office could easily do this.
Very good. Thank you, sir. We appreciate your coming all this way. Thank you. Next three, please.
Are Todd Mathias, Jim Mahar, and Melissa Stewart.
Good afternoon. Why don't you go ahead and start, sir?
Afternoon. My name is Jim Mahar. I'm safety manager for Anderson Construction. I think I asked for probably one of the biggest noise variances this year on my project. It was like 140 days, I want to say. It's a large-scale project, and to date, we've had no complaints from the neighbors regarding noise. And a lot of that is just because of the noise department that we worked with early on the forefront, helping with our liaisoning between the neighborhoods and the neighborhood associations. The Northwest Neighborhood Association is quite large, so it was very fun to work with them early on to figure out what their requirements were and what the cities were for our area. Paul mentioned it before that the zoning within the city is confusing. So what our limitations are and what our noise decibels are, it can become tricky, especially with a construction project and a large-scale one that I'm on. But I just wanted to thank the city for working with us on that because it's been a very smooth process and other cities are not that way. So I just wanted to say thank you to the noise department for that.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks.
Good afternoon.
Hi, my name is Todd Mathias. I'm an acoustical consultant here in town. I've been in Portland for doing this for 21 years now. And I was here just to speak on behalf of the noise officer in the noise office to show support because it's really helpful for what I do to have those people here in the city, not only, as you said, for clarifying code and making things easy to understand for both complainants and people that are generating noise. But also, in just, I have a respect for Paul, and I know the level of his technical competency, so I can rely on that. When he says, you know, this is what it is, I don't have to worry about it. If we